You're listening to the Product Podcast from Product School, featuring the best product leaders from Silicon Valley and beyond. If you're an aspiring product manager looking for your first PM role, or an experienced PM looking to level up your skills and advance your career, visit productschool.com to learn about our certificate courses and how we'll get you there. Robbie Ganguly grew up around great customer service. He was taught in his first jobs as a paperboy and grocery bagger that success comes from going the extra mile to make the customer feel happy. He also grew up around software, enjoying computers and technology from a young age. Today, he is bringing his early learnings together as the CEO at Aptentive and is sharing with us how you can use software and excellent customer service to succeed when building products. This episode is brought to you by ThoughtSpot, the modern analytics cloud company building a more fact-driven world with consumer-grade search and AI-driven analytics. With ThoughtSpot Everywhere, you can embed a highly interactive analytics experience into your data app and take your user adoption to the next level. Learn more and try ThoughtSpot for free today by visiting thoughtspot.com/everywhere.
Hey, everyone. I'm Carlos, the founder and CEO of Product School, and today I'm here with the co-founder and CEO at Aptentive, Robbie Ganguly. Hey, Robbie.
Hey there. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining the show. For people who are watching, beautiful polo shirt, very on brand. Why don't you tell us a bit more about your journey behind the scenes and how you ended up building Aptentive?
Sure. Yeah. You know, Aptentive is the culmination of a whole bunch of things that, looking backwards, have made sense, but I didn't know at the time. I grew up here in the Pacific Northwest. So Seattle is the headquarters of Aptentive. We have teammates all around the United States and actually in Europe as well. But Seattle's the headquarters, and I grew up in Redmond, which is a small city outside that when I was a kid was known really for Nintendo of America and now is known for Microsoft. But I grew up around software. I was playing with computers when I was 9 and 10 years old. And I grew up around really extraordinary customer service. So Starbucks, Nordstrom, REI, Costco, Alaska Airlines, Amazon. These are all companies that grew up in the area. And so when I was growing up, things I was taught with early jobs were really about making the customer feel super happy and doing the extra ordinary thing, the thing that was beyond what everybody else would do. So I had a paper route, and you know, in training me for the paper route, they're really clear. The Seattle Times was really clear about making every customer get everything on time, and if you ever missed a delivery, like making it right away. And they actually always stocked us with extra newspapers just in case the count was off, so the customer wouldn't miss out on their newspaper. And then I got a store job. Doing like bag boy work at a grocery store. So they taught us you take the bag out for everybody. And it doesn't matter if it's like two things in your groceries or 20 things in your cart, you take it out for everybody. And so, you know, I was raised with this environment of software and excellent customer service. And then I came out of undergrad having not really studied software, but I had met several people along the way who were studying software, and we were always talking about ideas. And I went into finance out of school, but I was not very far away from software. In my spare time, I was keeping in touch with several of my friends who had gone down the software route, who were working at tech companies, were working in data labs and building things. And we were on the side always working on things because we'd gotten this bug when we were in college as interns at Real Networks, that you could make anything and you could put it up on the internet and that you could just share it and people would, you know, come into contact with it. And so we were always doing stuff on the side, but I had this like core career in finance. And then I went to a small company that nobody knew of in 2002 called WebEx. And I was building this thing called web conferencing, and I was getting to know software as a service before anybody knew it. But I was on the side, I was like, hey, over here, I want to build something. You know, in my day to day, I'm working on pricing. I'm working on some of the things that are new in this industry, but on my side project was always trying to build software. And that never really went away. That was like 2002, 2005, 2008. Even when I joined Yahoo in 2005, it didn't go away. In fact, that it was intensified. Like there was stuff I wanted to work out, and that I had friends, in particular, one of my colleagues and friends that I'd met at Real Networks that we just wanted to work on stuff. So what really drove Aptenev was those things occurring, this passion happening for years and years, coincided in 2008 when I left the Bay Area and I moved up to Seattle. And another longtime friend decided to drive up with me. And he was a longtime Apple engineer. And he had worked on products like Time Machine. And he had left Apple in 2008 to work on a mobile app. So we drove for 16 hours from San Francisco to Seattle. And we were just talking about, we both left our big companies. We had these future dreams of building software for people. And he was building some apps and he was getting real traction in 2008. And that was really like the unlock. We started to say, wow, you know, what you're seeing with apps is really interesting. And it's 2008, so we knew it was early. And by the time we got to Seattle after that drive, that confluence of customer service and software and like really connecting the dots on helping people get a better experience, we had come to the conclusion that there was an opportunity that in mobile, because it was so personal, because the device is with you all the time, that really large companies could start to see this as an opportunity to collect feedback, to connect with customers, and to do it in a way where the customer was actually answering back, that it wasn't just about messages sent. And that germ then turned into a conversation we had two nights later with Mike, our third co-founder. And that really started the ball rolling. It was all that stuff coming together over the course of years. And then just one drive and one long conversation led to, we should really actually do something. We should build something.
I'm thinking right now, so you said 2008, you were thinking about mobile. What was the mobile or smartphone landscape at that time?
Yeah, so 2007, the iPhone comes out. June of 2008, the App Store is launched, right? And so we're about to come up on its anniversary, and DubDub is just a few weeks away. I know all my friends at Apple are working really hard to get ready for WWDC. So in 2008, you had the first version of the App Store. You had the iPhone 3G, which for those of you who remember, the iPhone 3G is probably the worst phone that Apple ever released because it was between 3G and 3GS. And so it was just fast enough to get download speeds and a lot of data, but not fast enough to process it. It was a painful phone. And we were just starting to see Windows phones and just starting to see Android phones. So at that point in time, we had effectively five big players. We had Apple as the small upstart. We had Microsoft with an ecosystem of hardware manufacturers. We had BlackBerry, which is the entrenched provider. And then you had Nokia trying to figure out what it was going to do around the space. But this was well before Microsoft and Nokia came together. And then you had Samsung out there trying to figure out what they're doing. So like as a result, we knew that there were going to be at least two platforms, but we didn't know which ones. We were pretty sure there was going to be Apple and somebody else.
Okay, so you had this idea with your friend in the car 2008 when mobile was emerging. Now we're in 2021. Give us a status update on Aptenev today.
Yeah, and that's a really cool way of asking that. So we started out with this idea that mobile was going to be ubiquitous. We were really motivated by the idea that it's the most personal device that people are going to own, and that as a result, companies can get way more personal. And so here we are, 2021, we have heard from, on behalf of our customers, right? We help really large consumer brands. We help product managers all around the world listen to their customers, particularly their mobile customers, and gauge changes in sentiment over time. And we have heard from, on behalf of our customers, 1 billion customers. So 1 billion end consumers around the world have answered questions via Aptenev, whether or not they knew it, because they're working with companies that we work with. And that's pretty awesome, right? When we thought about this, we said that the scale of mobile is so large that we could actually eventually change the way feedback and connections between companies and customers happens around the world. And we've collected feedback in over 50 different countries, 30 different languages. But again, that 1 billion consumers have given feedback through us is really one of the bright, shining accomplishments.
One thing I find cool is that, especially in product, we always reiterate that it's important to focus on the user and add value. But the reality is traditionally, product and marketing and sales, or everything related to go-to-market, has been prioritized, right? So like, okay, let's look fantastic before the user becomes a customer. And then when the customer pays, well, you know, send us an email. So I see that part of your mission is to give every customer a voice. I want to dig a little bit deeper into that and see what do you mean by that?
Yeah. This is a really, really passionate point for Team Aptentive. I mean, you can tell our logo is a heart. We really think that fundamentally humans are emotional beings. Like, we like to think of ourselves as super logical, but a lot of our decision-making is fundamental before we process it. It's emotional. It's about how you feel, whether or not you're safe, or if you're in a great mood, or you're frustrated or on the run. Like, these are all things that matter to our decision-making. And from the way that we saw the world unfolding and our experiences at companies like Apple, Microsoft, Yahoo, WebEx, Graystripe, we saw a lot of companies that said that the digital tools that we have built are most powerful, sending more and more messages out. And we thought, okay, I understand why people do this, but it's not the sum total of the relationship that humans have. So if you and I are going to talk, and all I do is talk at you, and you don't bring your voice to it, it's not really a conversation, it's not a dialogue. And yet all these companies who are running towards digital channels think, well, I can send lots of messages. That must be the point of the channel. And our view was, but the customer has to have a voice. If you really want this to be communication, the customer has to be able to talk. And it's not just send me a note from a no reply at email address and then expect me to go find your 1-800 number and call you. And that's, you've given me a voice. It's make it way, 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 way easier. So our point of view, and the reason that we've gotten to helping 1 billion consumers use their voice, but it's still not enough, is we have gone into company after company after company and tried to help them understand why it's valuable to proactively reach out to people before they tell you there's a problem. Why it's important to check in with customers on a regular basis because their experience changes. Why it's important to design experiences that actually collect feedback, not just about what people are doing, but why they're doing it and how they feel. And so that's where really giving everybody a voice comes in for us, is this notion that the digital channel is super powerful, but you've got to have both sides. You can talk, but you should listen. And through that lens, the more we can push forward listening proactively, the better we're doing.
This episode is brought to you by ThoughtSpot, the modern analytics cloud company building a more fact-driven world with consumer-grade search and AI-driven analytics. Build stickier product experiences by embedding ThoughtSpot Everywhere's interactive analytics interface directly into your data app or product. No more delayed release cycles or incremental UX improvements. ThoughtSpot Everywhere's developer-friendly platform replaces static dashboards with an interactive data experience in minutes, allowing users to intuitively dig into their data and trigger actions in their favorite business apps. Learn more and try ThoughtSpot for free today by visiting thoughtspot.com/everywhere.
I remember back in the day when push notifications came up, everything was like, oh my God, let's send more push notifications, more about driving top of the funnel growth. And the retention was more of an afterthought, right? And now we've totally seen how more PMs, especially our product-driven companies, are appreciating what it is to really connect with the customer. So I want to learn more about that for a PM. Like, most of the people who join our community are product managers. And I'm sure some of them use your product. But how can someone who's full-time job is not only to talk with customers, can really carve some time to get some of those insights and make them part of their iterative process?
Yeah, I think that the PM role is so challenging because you have to navigate so many different stakeholders. So you have the engineers that are doing the work that you want to make sure you understand the constraints and the things that are realistic and the timeframes. You've got maybe your marketing team that's saying, hey, what's going on? We need to actually go meet this competitor's requirements, or our core persona is asking for X and you're delivering Y. You've got maybe the C-suite saying, hey, product, execute on these things that we see from the overall market, or hey, the least favorite thing in mobile, Apple just announced something, we better go do it right now. All of those weights on the shoulders of PM can mean that being successful at the job feels impossible, or that being successful in a job means just do the things that the people who are most senior to us tell us to do. So at least we'll have advanced that. But we know you know, fundamentally, most people get into product management because they want to build something that meets needs that are not yet being met. And so that's where really every piece of the role does come back to, do your customers care about what you're doing? And are they enjoying it? Are you shipping things that move them forward? And so, you know, if that means that you're a PM in a small team just starting to get customers and you spend time on the phone with every customer every other week so that you can really be immersed in what their day-to-day is, then you do it. And if it means that you've got 100 million consumers of your app and it's impossible for you to talk to them every day, but you use our tools to touch 13 to 15% of them every month, and then that's a broad cross-section of your customers, and your data allows you to actually say customers of loyalty type 1 and feature usage 2 with longevity of 3, those customers say this, you can understand it better. Well, then that's what you need as a PM in your role to be more connected to the customer problems. Because with 100 million consumers, you can't really be connected to the customer. You have to start getting really specific about the persona and the audience. But I think, you know, to your question is, how do people do this? What we see is inherently everybody in product management wants to do this. Sometimes making the time for it and making it the building the muscle around doing it is a little bit challenging. But ultimately, you've got to, I think, fight with your leadership for the time to do that. And you've also got to instill in yourself some of the behaviors and the habits just to keep on top of it, because that's motivating.
Yeah, and I think for folks with experience building products and growing their career, they probably hit a wall at some point. So I also want to reference that, because in product, it's hard. We're leading by influence, but technically not too many people report into product directly. You're still partnering with engineering, design, customer success. And what would you say are some leading indicators, some ways or metrics that a PM could have to influence that decision and say, yes, while top line growth is important, here's a few numbers that are, you know, letting us know that we need to make a decision, otherwise it's going to catch up with us later.
Yeah, I think that the question about metrics, right? The question about how you measure success as a PM and how you influence others in the org and how you get them aligned around the same metrics is, it's an ever-present question, regardless of the size or the complexity of the company that we work with. It could be true for a very large consumer brand that has hundreds of thousands of retail locations, and it can be very true for a startup of 15 people. What we see is really successful product teams are able to connect the company goals to the metrics they're trying to drive towards. And they get agreement on the connection between the two. And product teams that tend to struggle have company goals and product goals that are not clearly connected. And as a result, every 3, 6, 9, 12 months, planning cycles come up, strategic decision-making comes up, and the conversation about where to go with product almost feels random because they don't have necessarily a set of metrics that map to or agreed upon the North Star of the company, right? So like making sure that these things really are connected helps refine the way that the product shows up for the company as a whole, because they can always come to the table and say, we're moving these metrics, and as a contextual reminder, it moves this piece of the business forward. This is why this metric is important. Now, you might disagree with what we're doing to move that metric, and we can have a very healthy conversation about if this piece of feature work that we're prioritizing is more important than this feature work that you would say is going to move this metric more. But a lot of times the conversations the product finds themselves in are, we have a feature, we have some capabilities, we're investing, we're moving what we think is important to our metrics. And then somebody else says, you should do this other thing, it's more important. And we can't have a dialogue about why it's more important. We can't have a dialogue about what's different about it, because the metrics are different that we're talking about. And so that's like the first step is, if you as a product team can really align your metrics and your measurements to the company goals, you always have an opportunity to be more agenda setting and more conversant with people on the same level.
I think good news for a lot of folks thinking, oh my God, this sounds amazing, but how am I going to now set it up? Like, how should I ask now my engineer to help me integrate with this tool? I think the good news, one of the trends we're noticing in the industry in general is that product management is being decentralized. And in part, that's because some of these tools are also being decentralized. And You don't need to be a user researcher to access qualitative information the same way you don't need to be a data scientist to access data. And these type of tools, which seem to be very visual, just allow more collaboration across teams. And I cannot emphasize that enough, because I remember back in the day when I was breaking into product, oh my God, I literally had to reinvent the wheel in many ways. And now you can almost like create a Lego with your own stack. Like, you can plug and play something that's been tested. You can obviously customize it according to your need, but you don't have to start from scratch.
Yeah, you definitely don't. I mean, I think what you're bringing up, I think, is worth investigating through the lens of there are so many tools and there are so many options for people to access the data out of those tools that I would say that one of the problems we see in the ecosystem now is self-service is not enough. What do I mean by that? I mean, if you're a product manager and you exist in an organization that has multiple teams responsible for the agendas that you're driving for, and you say, well, I publish my data, or my data is available in this tool. Like, you've got to log into Aptenev. You can go see the customer feedback and you can see what's prioritized and how people are doing. Just because the people on your team or in those other pieces of the organization could, doesn't mean that they do. And so what I see sometimes is, hey, there's a lot of data available, but then the job of the PM is still to contextualize and present the data in a way that for the audience, it resonates and that they inherit that framework and say, yeah, I buy into it and I can repeat it back to you. So what we see a lot of times, unfortunately, is that disconnect that the product team says, oh, we look at this every week. We're totally familiar with how the dashboards work. We're completely familiar with what we take that is real information and what we discount because we see it a lot, right? Like those kinds of choices that you do on a day-to-day basis when you live in it. But that doesn't mean that the audience that we need to convince that this is important is as facile with the data. It doesn't mean that they log into the dashboards when we tell them to. It doesn't mean that they interpret the reports and the data the way we think they should. And so part of the motion becomes once a month, once a quarter, or maybe once a week, you're walking the relevant stakeholders through, hey, here's an update, here's what's going on, so that they're actually conversant at least enough for you to be along on the same page. And so I see what you're saying in terms of there's all these tools and it's easier and some of this is a lot better and different. But I also see the way that that presents more challenges for product teams, because now you have to navigate a different challenge. It's not just, hey, can we get the data? It's, are you going to look at it and can we agree on what data we're using?
Totally. One of the things I love asking to CEOs that build a product for PMs is, how do you drink your own champagne?
Gulps and then sips and then gulps and then sips with the pinky up, actually. But to be very serious, it's so gratifying to build for product managers because they can recognize the things that are hard about what you're doing. And it's so challenging to build for product managers because they can tell you all of the obvious ways that you are messing up. And we have always been real huge fans of feedback, and we take it in and we say, that's awesome. And we try to learn more around it. We try to use our tools to collect feedback. We try to do more explicit for us being proactive is like a tremendous piece of the story. Like, we believe every customer organization should be proactive in getting out. So we try to do more. And so one of the ways that we drink that champagne is that we use our tools on the web to collect feedback from customers. Another way is that we use low tech things like making sure that we talk to almost all of our customers at least once a year, if not multiple times a year. In fact, most of our relationships, we want to be talking to you once a month, if not more often. And that we're encouraging all of our teammates the space to listen to customers and to create questions, conversations that allow them to tell us more. And so those are things that are kind of indoctrinated into our culture, not just the product management organization of Aptenev, but overall, hey, collect feedback. You're part of this whole philosophy of collecting feedback. And I think through that lens, you know, it's one of the ways that we show up a little bit differently than most.
Like that. I agree with you. It's a mindset. It's not just part of a specific team. And I think creating that type of motion for everybody to share and collect feedback, it's a way to grow. And now I want to ask you about you personally, how you are growing. You pretty much built the first person. You've been building and growing your company for a very long time. So as a CEO today, what has changed and how do you keep up with everything?
I think the first answer is I don't try to keep up with everything. I think that any person in product knows that you have to prioritize, right? Like if you have 18 things you want to get done, you probably won't get any of them done. You've got to really focus on the big things. So what's changed for me is when we were five people, I was really day-to-day product management. I was day-to-day marketing, go-to-market and sales. Those roles have changed. And I've thankfully found people who are much better at those roles than me to be in them on a regular basis. And what I'm more capable of doing now, the things that I have unique capabilities around are not the same that they were in the beginning. And so I keep discovering new places where I'm like, oh, I can do this now. I can do this. This is the thing I'm uniquely capable of. So in the early days, while it was product management and telling the story, it was also setting the philosophy that making customer feedback should be important to all of us was like the philosophical choice that we were saying in the beginning. And then as we grew to 10 and 15, it was reinforcing, hey, folks, people are seeing me calling customers when there are issues. People are seeing me in the conversation and support with customers. And then when we get to 30, that it's not just about, hey, showing that, but it's also when you onboard the team. We do a thing called the Founders Talk. When you join the team in the first month, we walk you through all of our values and we talk about what it looks like to show up for customers and what it looks like to do one of our values, deliver customer love. And that's a piece of things that I can do uniquely. I can say, hey, from CEO on down, we're going to show up this way for customers. And now I have the opportunity to talk to more people because we've been around for a while and the company has been successful. I get to talk to you. I get to talk to this awesome audience of product managers and I get to go meet our customers. And those are things I get to do as a result of my role. And I would say every time I take on a new capability or a new role that I didn't have before, I'm not very good at it. But what I am pretty good at is learning. I'm pretty good at taking some feedback and trying to get better at it. And that's something that's kind of kept me more on the path I would like to be than anything else.
Love that you mentioned learning. I'm very passionate about lifelong learning as well. So I'm always curious to know different styles. And I'm sure there are different ways depending on what you're trying to learn. But obviously, taking feedback is one. Is there anything else that worked particularly well for you or is working now in terms of what your next learning goals?
I'm a very read it, execute it, practice it kind of learner. Like I grew up, like I said, in Redmond, and Redmond had an awesome public library. And I'm a huge fan of public libraries as a result of this. Like I like to read. I grew up as a kid being obsessed with books and reading a ton of them. And it was just a huge part of my early identity. And so for me, if I need to go into a new area, it's like, what books, what blogs, what am I going to read and listen to? Sometimes now it's which audiobooks or which podcasts, but I still, I'm like, I love pulling out my Kindle and reading really quickly. And that's a place where I'll go really deep. And then if I can, I want to get into doing it. And so what I will give you kind of like tangential, but related is I like to cook. I love to cook. And over the past 6 years, I've gotten really into smoking meat in particular, like long, slow barbecue. And so I read a lot. I've got a bunch of cookbooks, but I also do it a lot. And the more I do it, the more I pick up on techniques and tips and tricks. And the more I do it, the more I have to share with other people who are good. And then that community builds. And it feels similar to software, but it's so tactically different. With such a different time frame, like I can start a meal today and be done tomorrow if I'm making barbecue, whereas I could start a software project today and never be done. That's a place where I also get to execute on that practice mentality, and it's pretty cool.
Totally, and it's hands-on. That's something you cannot really delegate much.
Totally, 100%.
But honestly, the pattern that I take out of that, and I talk with their founders and product leaders, is that curiosity for learning something and not stopping there. And yes, reading or doing or talking, like doing whatever it takes until you somehow get good at it, right? And I think that can apply to so many things in life. So anyway, just to wrap up, I want to ask you a futuristic question. Like how, for people who are out there thinking about, okay, I like building digital products, what would you say something that could serve them well to try to go from zero to one. I'm not talking about starting an entire company, but just to get their hands dirty and put something on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, if you are trying to go from, I have an idea to let me just get it out there and play with it, and you're stuck. Number one piece of advice I can give you is that really you're only stuck because of yourself, right? Like your mind is holding you back. If you are capable of building some software, as small or as tiny as it could be, and then putting it out for the world to interact with, whether it's two friends or you've got a mailing list of 100,000, just getting it out there is that first obstacle that you have to overcome. And that obstacle is more about you than anything else. And I think for a lot of people that I've, you know, admired from afar, some of whom I've gotten to know, they all say the basic same thing, which is, I'm lazy too, right? I beat myself up too. I do things like I come up with a great idea and I don't execute on it. They all say that. But the one difference from all these people is that they eventually got over it in some area and said, well, I'm lazy, but I'm going to get this thing out. I'm lazy, but I'm going to ship it and get some feedback on it. And that's really like what I would just say to anybody is get out of your own way. Start off as small as possible. It doesn't have to be a company. It just has to be something somebody plays with and says, that's crummy. And you're like, why? And that's it. That's the cycle. That's when it begins. You start getting feedback and away you go.
Thank you for your time, Rob. It's been awesome to learn from you. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I mean, I think I am super passionate about customer relationships and customer feedback. And I think that this is a hard problem to solve. So if you want to talk to me at all about it, I'm on LinkedIn, Roby Ganguly, happy to chat and connect. I'm on Twitter at rganguly. And our company, Aptenov, is clearly super focused on helping billions of consumers give their feedback. So we have a lot to say on it. But I want to thank you for what you're doing with Product School. I think this makes it more accessible for everybody around the world to build better products. And that's fantastic. So I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for giving back to the community. Take care.
Oh, my pleasure. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Taking the time to write just a few sentences about what you love most about the show will help us improve it and reach even more product people around the world. And when you're done, why not reward yourself with some free product management content and resources over at productschool.com? Until next time, stay product-led.